You know, way back in my somewhat argued prime of my life, that being probably 10 years ago, I don't think it's the prime of my life, but you know, some people would argue that it is the prime of my life. Who knows? I'm not one to argue with them. I would believe that back then, summer, just the entire season of summer was probably my favorite time of year. But as I've gotten into my old age, I'm 26 now. That was a joke. I'm not old, but as I've gotten older, for sure, summer, it is dwindling. It's remaining few bits of appreciation from me, to be honest with you, because it's too hot. And I know, you know, I'm basically throwing from my ivory towers just because it's not as hot here in Sheridan, Wyoming, obviously, as it is, you know, the further south you go has been over the past 2 weeks. But man, still, like, anything over 90 for me at this point, I'm just like, let's just turn the lights off and try again tomorrow. You know, like, I don't want to do 90 degrees. Give me like 80 to 87, and I'm probably pretty happy. Anything higher than that, I'm just like, it's too much, you know? It becomes uncomfortable. And it's only 91 degrees today right now. It's windy out, but over the past like week and a half, it's just been consistently 90. We've gotten like 85 a couple of times here and there, and that's totally doable. Like 85, I can work with that. That's totally fine. But once you get plus, like 90 plus, I'm like, just forget it. You know, let's just get to the nighttime so we can start over tomorrow and try to shoot for like 85, maybe 80. 80 is perfect. As I've gotten older, summer, towards like the back third of, or the back three, or back two, I guess, of my favorite seasons. And I'm going spring fall at this point, you know? I'm a spring fall guy now. I like the warmer weather, but not to where it's making me uncomfortable. And that's where it is now. It's really annoying. I was born in July, and now at this point, I don't like July because it's always so hot. It's always way too hot. And I just don't like going outside when it's 90 plus degrees. You know, it feels uncomfortable. But here we are, you know, still 90 degrees, 90 plus degrees. It looks like it's going to stay that way all the way through August. I loved during, like, we had one of the wettest springs into summers that Sheridan has like ever had. And I just want to go back to that. Like, I loved that. I loved having the rain and it raining basically every other day. Like, that was really nice. The temperature was never too hot. Get a couple sunny days, like 4 out of the 7 days of the week, it was sunny, but not like over exhausting heat sunny. You know what I mean? Like a perfect 77 degrees. You can go out and play golf and not, you know, feel like you just jumped into a pool full of sweat. Like, that's where it is at this point. It is so, it's just, it beats down on you. It really kills your, it really kills the vibes out there, you know, the straight up vibes. And honestly, like I said, Sheridan, it's not that bad. You go down to like Phoenix, where I think they're coming off like 15 straight days of 110 plus degrees. Why do people live in Phoenix? Why do people live in Arizona? Like, why do you live in Arizona? What is the point of living in Arizona? The other area that I actually have expertise in is Houston. My dad lived in Houston for a while. He's lived there two separate times. He hates it. I know he hated it. And I absolutely hated it. Whenever I went to go see my dad, I was like, Dad, I'd love to see you anywhere else because I cannot stand Houston. Anything to do with Houston in the summer, you should be doing like any sort of activity. You should be doing it inside during the summer rather than outside because it is too hot in the summer in Houston. And Phoenix, what are you doing? Why do you live in Phoenix? Like, why does anybody live in Arizona if that's what's happening in the summer in July? If it's 110 plus degrees for 15 straight days, why does anybody live in Phoenix? Like, that makes no sense to me. You're just actively making yourself uncomfortable going outside every single, like, you might as well just live in your house. You might as well just dig underground and live like, you know, like moles and stuff at that point. If it's going to be 110 plus degrees every single, or for 15 straight days in the middle of July and heading into August. No, thank you. Why would anybody want to live in Arizona? I guess the winters are probably pretty nice, you know, heading into the fall through winter. Like, I bet November through March is really nice in Arizona, but like summer, like, everybody should just abandon Phoenix during July and August and like Scottsdale, just get out of there, just abandon it, leave it for the desert at that point. Come back in November when it's supposed to be really nice. Cause I don't get how people live. I don't get how people live in Phoenix/Scottsdale during July and August. I don't understand it. I don't understand. It just doesn't make any sense to me. Lady, hey, welcome. Welcome to the Weekend Sports Rep Podcast. It's been a couple weeks. Last one was 2 weeks ago, I believe, or a week ago, 2 weeks ago, technically. There's just, you know, summer gets a little dead around here, I'll be honest with you. We did have, you know, rodeo week was going on. So if you're familiar with Sheridan, that's like the busiest time of the week or busiest time of the year. Actually, that week is the busiest time of the year. So, you know, got put on the back burner a little bit, got a little behind on certain things. But we recovered. We're here now. We're talking sports, and I'm going to try to do week to week at this point. But again, the summer, it gets a little dead. You kind of wait for things to pile on a little bit before you make a podcast make an informational podcast, if you will, this sort of podcast to put out into the world, because I don't want to just be sitting here for 30 minutes not talking about anything or things that I don't think is very interesting. So here we are. Here we are. I'm going to try to do it week to week. But for now, all that matters right now is we're here now and we're talking about a bunch of different things. We got a couple things we're going to talk about. The first thing I want to talk about today is football related, actually. Training camp is getting underway. And it's not that far away. I think it's college football is only 50 days, maybe less than that, 50 days away, something like that. And NFL football preseason starts coming up on early mid-August. You know, the Hall of Fame game is coming up. That is right around the corner. Football is nearly here, ladies and gentlemen. It really is, for most of the country, like the beginning of football season and the end of football season, and that's how you break apart your year. I think there's a decent amount of people that really look at their year that way. And that's, you know, when it comes to podcasting, that's definitely how people, you know, there's football season and then there's football off season. And, you know, you find stuff to stitch together during football off season. And then during the season, there's plenty of stuff to talk about. That's kind of how I think the country looks at, especially sports fans, looks at the NFL. There's plenty of storylines in the MLB and stuff like that. But with how expansive the season in the MLB is, it feels like you can just put it off and wait, you know, another 2 weeks or something like that before you can talk about it, because, you know, there's plenty of time to, if you will. And it doesn't feel like as important. Each game is as important as something like, you know, the NFL week 8 is, for whatever reason. We see week 8. We look back at week 8 and we're like, that was an important game. Who would have thought, you know? And that's just, it's weird how the NFL just has a stranglehold on whatever sports is going on, whatever sports is happening during, you know, October through February, essentially, I guess September through February, essentially, you know, get out of the way of football, because, you know, don't plan on having anything on Sunday, because, you know, it's going to get run over no matter what it is. If the World Series is going on in October, they don't play games around Sunday because they know they're going to get trampled, even though it's the biggest series of the year, the most important games of the year in baseball. They know that a week 7 game in the NFL on a Sunday is going to trample their World Series game. So they don't put World Series games on Sundays, or they try not to. And you'll see that happen, you know, with other sports as well, mainly baseball, obviously, because October is their championship season. So they have a lot of important games going on during that time of the year. But October, you know, and with football going on in October, and it's just, you know, typical, you know, normal regular season games in the middle of October. But the MLB is openly just like, yeah, we'll evacuate. We'll evacuate those Sundays because we know we're going to get trampled in ratings and viewership, even though it's the World Series, because America just loves football and that's how it works. But we're not talking about regular season. We're actually talking about something more specific in football, and that is our primary story, kind of topic, I guess, not really a story, is the death of the NFL running back. It is truly a sad sight to see what has happened to the NFL running back just in general. It has really lost that position entirely. And we talked about it during the regular season last year. It's really lost a lot of its sheen, if you will, towards the rest of the NFL, or the rest of the NFL looks at it as a, and I think this is how the NFL, the NFL running backs feel. It looks like that they look at it as less of a primary or important position for a lot of football teams, even though the run game is still important. But it feels like the game has evolved so much that, and especially with the top flight teams that you see in the NFL today, your Bills, your Chiefs, there's a couple teams that are in there that are still have fantastic run games, but, you know, they're kind of built more around a good receiving back or somebody that receives the ball well out of the backfield, or a good pass protector out of the backfield, that sort of thing. Austin Eckler with the Chargers, the Bengals, they have Joe Mixon, who's a great runner, but he just had to take a pay cut in order to keep his job, because I think a lot of people, they won't say this, but I think a lot of people in the Bengals organization assume that they can probably find somebody that can do the job as well as Joe Mixon somewhere in the draft, or somebody that they can just slot in and be like, all right, this is what we're doing. You know, if you're good enough at receiving the football, if you could find these holes on first, second down, even less than that, because more often than not, we're not seeing, you know, second down runs as much anymore, especially in intermediate down and distance. So like second and sevens, we're seeing passes out of those situations more than ever, and out of first and 10 more than ever, because we're seeing teams like the Chiefs, the Bills, the Bengals, obviously. But, you know, there's a couple exceptions to that rule, I would say. The Eagles and the 49ers are teams that still lean pretty heavily on their run game. But, you know, they are so different in the way that they approach the run game, I think, that sets them apart from the rest of the people that are used to seeing just, you know, your typical hard, you know, nose to the grindstone, quote unquote, type of running back that was so popular in the NFL during like the 70s and the 80s. And then even into the early 2000s as well, with guys like Maurice Jones-Drew, Jerome Bettis and stuff like that, who were very much, you know, punch it right up the gut type of running backs, not people you would see come out of the backfield trying to field a pass or, you know, get a screen out of the backfield, that sort of thing. And the game has changed so much, and it is so reliant on speed now that they see now, and this isn't necessarily the case for all the running backs that we're going to go through here in just a second. But speed and the position of wide receiver has almost overlapped the idea of having a running back out of the backfield. That is almost their expectation of a career, more or less, at the running back position is so short that it almost doesn't. And the decline is so rapid after a certain amount of time that the signing of an extension to somebody like a running back does not seem like a feasible financial decision for a lot of these teams, or a smart financial decision for a lot of these teams, where they can just go find, you know, they have a plethora of running backs that are getting paid not nothing in comparison to, you know, you or me, but nothing in comparison to the rest of the NFL. When they come out of the draft, if they're drafted in the third or fourth round or whatever, they're getting paid, you know, that a rookie minimum type deal, or, you know, a $4 to $5 million deal, something like that, something that, you know, does not really even come close to touching your salary cap or anything like that. And somebody that is somewhat quote unquote fresh when it comes to injury situation. But even then, you look at a guy like Derrick Henry, who is one of those rare occurrences today where it's definitely one of those, you know, straight up the gut type of running backs, hard hitting running backs. And he, whatever he is made of, transformer type titanium, who has not really suffered a whole lot of injuries. He dealt a little bit with injuries last year, but at college, I mean, he largely did not deal with a whole lot of injuries. And in college, he ran 602 carries out of the backfield for Alabama. That is coming out of college. And so far in his NFL career, he's going into his eighth season. He's had 1,750 attempts at the running back position, 378 total attempts in 2020, and 349 just this past year. Again, he dealt with injuries in 2021. He missed about half the season due to an injury in 2021. But for the most part, he's been a really healthy running back, even though he's been one of those, you know, pounded right up the gut, you know, hard-nosed, hard-hitting, doesn't like to avoid contact, if you will, type of running backs. He likes to hit people. And I think from the NFL perspective, or the front office perspective, I guess is what I should say, that is being seen in the sport as something that is, you know, something that's not feasible through a certain amount of time in the NFL, past your rookie contract even, which gets me to the larger point that I'm getting to, is you look at the offseason that a lot of the running backs had this past offseason. Saquon, he was looking for a franchise he was looking for an extension. He just signed, like literally yesterday, a 1-year, $11 million deal. If he franchise tagged, it would have been a $10.5 million deal. And he's got a bunch of incentives included in the contract as well. But he just signed a 1-year, $11 million deal. He's going to look for, I mean, he's probably not going to be approached for any sort of extension by the Giants come this next offseason. So he'll probably go into free agency, I would assume. Josh Jacobs, who just led the league in rushing in terms of rush yards, just got put on the franchise tag. Tony Pollard, who took over for Ezekiel Elliott, and somebody who is a perfect example of the new wave that we're kind of seeing in running backs. He took over for Ezekiel Elliott, Zeke being drafted in the first round back in 2016. And then just 3 years later, Tony Pollard is drafted by the Dallas Cowboys in the fourth round as somebody that looked like he was just going to be maybe a backup, but somebody who also, you know, he's younger, he's fresh meat, if you will, quote unquote. fresh meat for that person, for somebody that can slide into Ezekiel Elliott's spot as a starter if he starts playing better, and Ezekiel Elliott, as he kind of ages out or gets hurt, you can have somebody like Tony Pollard just slide in there as a fourth round selection on the cheap, who is still very good at his position and who does a lot at his position for offense, for the Dallas Cowboys offense that Zeke can't necessarily do anymore after those 3 years or whatever. I guess more recently, after those, you know, basically 6 or 7 years, Tony Pollard's able to slide in there, you know, hasn't had to deal with a whole lot of injuries. Ezekiel Elliott has had to deal with injuries. Tony Pollard comes in as fresh meat, cheaper than Ezekiel Elliott, and he just takes his job. Now Ezekiel Elliott, he's a free agent. He's looking for work. Dalvin Cook is a free agent. He was a marquee running back for the Minnesota Vikings for the last 4 years, it feels like. I think it's about 4 years. And now he's a free agent. He's still looking for a job. He's probably going to be, he was sniffing around Miami for a while, but I think they stalled a little bit. I don't think they turned him down necessarily, but they stalled a little bit because of the price tag, I would imagine. And the prices that these running backs are offering is so far, or asking for, is so far out of the league of what the owners and the general managers see them as of value, I think. Miles Sanders is another one. He played for Philadelphia these past few seasons, helped lead them to a Super Bowl. Didn't win, but helped lead them to a Super Bowl nonetheless. He was forced out of Philly because his asking price was too high. He plays in Carolina now. Austin Eckler, another example. He requested a trade because he felt he was underpaid. He didn't get any suitors in that requesting of a trade, so he stays in L.A. Joe Mixon, again, he took a pay cut to keep his job in a pay cut. How often do you see that in the NFL, especially at the running back position, where a guy like him, a marquee player in the NFL, especially at that position, probably a top seven guy in the NFL at that position, maybe even higher than that, top five guy in the NFL at that position, is taking a pay cut so that he can continue to play with the Cincinnati Bengals. And because I think he kind of sees the motion of the ocean at this point, where he's like, I'm going to be, and it's sad because, you know, I a lot of these guys are people that are quickly, you know, some of the first names you'll see out of somebody's head if you're talking about people in their specific teams in the NFL. Saquon's probably the first person that you think of if you're thinking of the New York Giants. And Dalvin Cook was probably one of the first people other than Justin Jefferson that you think of if you're thinking about the Vikings. But Joe Mixon probably saw the motion in the ocean. He says, you know, I'm probably going to get replaced by somebody else if I don't take this pay cut or lesser than money than he probably feels like he's worth or was worth, you know, just 10 years ago at that position. So what needs to change in the NFL for running backs to continue to have their value be something that they can approve of, I guess, technically? They should probably because of that position, out of college, if they're drafted, they should probably make more money straight out of the draft than other positions should be because of the expectation of that position and the expectancy of career out of that position out of college. That is something that needs to be looked at in terms of how much they're making just straight out of college. And then, I mean, I don't know what you do for extensions and stuff like that, because again, it's not necessarily the fact that they're bad players or anything like that, or that injuries have hurt them and that's really hurt their value. There's a couple of those situations, like Ezekiel Elliott, injuries have kind of hurt him a little bit, and he's aged out a little bit, I would say. And the guy behind him, Tony Pollard, just looked more explosive whenever he was on the field. And Saquon Barkley, he's dealt with injuries as well. But for the most part, I think it's just the fact that the game around them has changed so much that the running back position itself has almost become a replaceable position in the NFL, which is crazy, because if you just look 10 years ago, guys like Adrian Peterson were looking for, you know, massive deals. He signed one in the early part of his career that ended up being worth $86 million, if I remember correctly. This is Adrian Peterson. He signed with the Vikings when he was drafted by the Vikings, and then he signed a 6-year, $86.2 million deal in 2011. And then something just changed. Something changed about the outlook. And yeah, I don't know if I can pinpoint a specific spot or a specific reason. I think part of it is because you look at the success of somebody like Patrick Mahomes, or somebody, the success of Josh Allen. And then also the wide receiver position is being seen as a much more important position to spend the money on, I think, for a lot of these teams, because of guys like Tyreek Hill, guys like Ja'Marr Chase, even Travis Kelce, even though he's a tight end, but you can kind of mesh him into that wide receiver conversation as well as a security blanket for your quarterback as well. And they're seeing the importance for that position to be the focal point of an offense more so than the running back. And that is shifting the narrative around how important the running back position really is overall. And, you know, other guys from 2013, like LeSean McCoy, he led the league in rushing yards that year. And he was on a contract after that. He was signed to, in 2012, a five-year, $45 million contract. Now, we might see, another 5 year, I mean, even $40 million, $45 million for a 5 year contract seems like a lot for a running back at this point, for the amount of money that they're actually going to get paid, like Saquon Barkley, 1 year, $11 million deal. So I don't know if we're going to see anything that we might see in the lower, if I don't think any player is going to ever sign it, but maybe a 5 year, $30 million deal or something like that. But you won't see it where it is a huge percentage of it counted against the cap, because the cap has changed obviously over the past 10 years as well. So the cap hit is going to be taken a little bit differently. So that $30 million from today's money isn't the same as the $30 million from, 10 years ago money. And then, you can go down the line as well, just looking at players from the past 25 years where the running back position is really, right. It wasn't as important. It's never been as important, obviously, as the quarterback position by any means. I'm not saying that, but you could argue that it was almost sharing a similar amount of limelight as the quarterback position has. I think for the most part, because whenever that's the second position you look at going down the line, going back 20, 25 years ago. Who is the running back after the quarterback? Who's the running back on this team? Are they going to be able to get a certain amount of, are they going to be able to be the run game that it is surrounded upon that allows the pass game to succeed? Whereas now it's more, can you open up the pass game to allow the run game to succeed? We're seeing more of that versus can you run the football effectively enough to open up the pass game? It's now kind of switched where we see, Patrick Mahomes, and I'm naming a lot of the same guys, but that's because they're the best. Joe Burrow, Josh Allen, they're more just throwing the ball, getting into these big leads or these leads that are strong enough for them, getting enough points on the board so that they can open up the run game in order to run down the clock. It's less about controlling the clock at this point until the end of the game than it was before, where it was controlling the clock at the beginning of the game and basically the entire game. Whereas now, you got guys like the Chiefs or the Bills that can score in 25 seconds or whatever, 27 seconds, week in, week out, or go down the field. One of those guys can go 8 for 8 on a drive and it's no big deal and they score a touchdown. It's just not the same anymore. What they're asking is not the same thing anymore from their running backs. It's more of a, hey, if we need you to get this, third and two, third and three, right up the gut, can you do it for us? Or even more so, can you run a couple of simple out of the backfield type routes or swing passes or screens, that sort of thing? And that is becoming more and more the precedent, especially with guys like the Chiefs who are unbelievably effective at running pass game, their pass game out of the backfield, like their EPA per play on plays that are developed out of the backfield in terms of like swing passes to their wide receivers that are before the line of scrimmage is like eons ahead of anybody else in the National Football League. So we're going to start to see, we've already seen it, that the development and the change in the importance of the running back position as it's gone forward. And I think a lot of these running backs are now coming to terms with the fact that their position is not as, I don't want to say important because it is an important position, obviously, but maybe their effectiveness at the position is not as important as it used to be, or as it used to be viewed amongst the general public. And I will say this, if you are somebody, a kid that is learning to play football, that is wanting to play football, don't pick running back. Okay. I hate to say that. I apologize. A lot of everybody's favorite players are running backs. I totally understand that. Pick a wide receiver, pick cornerback, pick defense, pick safety, something like that. You're going to get paid at those positions because those are becoming more and more important as the reliance on offense of the wide receiver has become more and more important. The ability to be a safety play in the box as well has become more and more important. And then a cornerback that can match the speeds of certain people throughout the field or go toe to toe with somebody like Jamar Chase or Justin Jefferson. That is becoming more and more important in the league as well. So be a cornerback, work on your ability as a cornerback, or be a wide receiver, be a defensive lineman even, because that's becoming more and more important too. You got to be able to rush the quarterback with four because, you know, playing quarterback against the blitz seems to be easier, especially with these top echelon quarterbacks who are able to just read blitzes and know exactly where to go every time. If you're able to rush the quarterback with four and be effective at it, then, you know, you might as well be a defensive end because you might get paid the big bucks there. You won't get paid the big bucks anymore as it stands right now. You won't get paid the big bucks if you want to go into the NFL playing running back. You have a better chance doing it as a wide receiver, as a cornerback, as a safety. If you're good enough, safeties, you know, you have to be really good at safety to get paid the big bucks there. Cornerback, defensive lineman, that sort of thing. So if you're a kid listening to this and you want to play football, don't play running back. I apologize. I'm sorry to the football parents out there. If you're listening, I apologize, okay? But I'm telling you, there is not necessarily there's not as much of a strong future at that position as there is at the wide receiver position or a lot of defensive positions in the NFL as it stands right now. It could shift again, but as it stands right now, this is the future of NFL football and just football in general. Pass heavy, running backs that are better at receiving the ball than necessarily running the ball. That is just the future that we're looking at dead in the face at this point. Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for a break to hear from one of our sponsors. That is right. A sponsor of the program. We have our first sponsor on this program in the history of the program, and it is Jack and Kathleen Wood at 307 Real Estate. Now, look, ladies and gentlemen, I get it. You got to navigate the real estate market. It is impossible. Everybody on House Hunters makes it look super easy. They just go into three different houses and they pick the house that they want. Boom, bang, boom. Episode's over. They have a house. It's not that easy, ladies and gentlemen. And Jack and Kathleen Wood will be able to help you throughout that process. And even the people in House Hunters, they have a real estate agent. And these people, Jack Wood, Kathleen Wood at 307 Real Estate, could be your House Hunter-esque real estate agents. So if you're looking to buy real estate, sell real estate in the Sheridan area, these are the two people you should call. Jack at 307-763-1249 and Kathleen at 307-461-7203. So listeners, one of the only things I'll ask from you is to support the people that support the show. And that includes these two, Jack and Kathleen Wood at 307 Real Estate. Thank you very much for the sponsorship and make sure you contact them for all of your real estate needs at 307-763-1249 and 307-461-7203. Okay, let's move on. That's the running back position. It is unfortunately dying. We're going to leave that topic there, though, and we're going to move on. We're going to stay in football. We're going to move on to something that made me do a little fist pump, you know, one of those little fist pump, a little Tiger Woods fist pump, not the winning fist pump, you know, when he gives the little uppercut or whatever with the red shirt on or anything like that. No, a little fist pump, third round, you know, 12th hole, little birdie putt, that sort of fist pump, that kind of fist pump, because we have yet to see how this all plays out. But it was with great happiness and joy that I saw this past week, pretty much. These sorts of things just happen over like months on end, you know, it doesn't actually happen until months later. But the Commanders, the Washington football team, the Washington Commanders have been approved to finally sell after years. I mean, Dan Snyder said he was never going to hold it up. He said, I'm never going to sell this team. And then finally, it has been sold. The team has been sold. And I know a lot of Washington football fans are super happy. Dan Snyder is one of the just grossest piece of garbage owners that professional sports has ever seen, I would argue. Probably one of the worst ownership groups in the history of professional sports, especially in the U.S., I think. It has been unanimously approved by all the other owners that the Commanders will be sold, and they're being sold to a group led by Josh Harris. Josh Harris and Magic Johnson. So the Commanders, they're finally getting sold. For those of you that aren't aware, which I think if you're listening to the show, you're probably aware of how tumultuous that entire situation with Dan Snyder had become as the owner of the Washington football team, the Washington Commanders. They were bought by Washington in 1999 by Dan Snyder. They'd made six playoff appearances, six since 1999. It cycled through a bunch of different head coaches and starting quarterbacks in pursuit of any sort of consistency, obviously. Then, you know, the on-the-field product was never good, obviously. The stadium experience is considered one of the worst in the league, if not one of the worst in America, just in general. Their own self-inflicted terrible public relations situation, and there's not many examples better than that than the entire Sean Taylor situation from last year. Just one of the most disrespectful presentations to an icon for their team as he was his jersey was being retired by Washington. And it was clearly put together at the last second because they were battling some obviously public relations, public relations problems at the time when they tried to throw this all together. And it was clear that they were just trying to throw it all together to create some sort of good public relations in their side. But there were plenty of things that were going terribly in that entire ceremony. One of the icons of their team, Sean Taylor, he was killed in his home trying to stop a burglary from happening in his home, and he was murdered. And out of respect for them, out of respect for him, what should have been was a jersey retirement, the number retirement for Sean Taylor, one of the greatest safeties, I think we could say, that we never got to really see pan all the way out. But I mean, the road was rededicated in front of porta potties. It was Sean Taylor Drive. And if you look at the picture, you can go see all these pictures. Sean Taylor Drive. And the picture is you see the little address sign. And then right behind it is a bunch of porta potties. Good job, Washington. The sideline number tribute that they do for a lot of these ceremonies that they put on the sideline on the outside of the out of bounds line was in the area where the VIP stand for the opposing team. So you just had a bunch of the other teams, VIPs. I think it was the Chiefs that were in town at this point. So you had a bunch of Chiefs VIPs standing on the 21, which, you know, for there was no reason to believe that they were doing anything wrong. They were just standing in the VIP area that was allotted to them by the Washington football team. The halftime ceremony that is always involved in all of these as well, where they show the number off, they show the jersey that's going to be retired. And there's usually speeches that are involved in all this. Any sort of recognition is usually involved in this. There was no speeches or recognition. It was just people out on the field with the Sean Taylor 21 jersey. And then that was the end of the halftime recognition. And then the owner, Dan Snyder, wore a hoodie and some beautiful little khakis, a hoodie and some khakis. By the way, this is the owner of the football team, a guy that drafted Sean Taylor and put him on that field. And then he was regrettably murdered trying to stop a burglary. This was the guy that was drafted him at his own jersey retirement ceremony that he was having at the field for a picture with the jersey that was going to be retired. Dan Snyder wore a hoodie and some khakis to the pregame meeting with Sean Taylor's family. It looks like how I would look if I just woke up and needed to go to the dollar store to grab something. That is what Dan Snyder looks like in this picture. I hate him so much. And that is like the tiniest bit of issues that people had with Dan Snyder. He oversaw a very, very, very toxic atmosphere in Washington, internally with the Commanders as well. In July of 2021, the NFL fined Snyder $10 million after an investigation found a, quote, highly unprofessional environment within the organization's offices. He also ceded day-to-day team operations. Shortly after the sale was announced on Thursday, the NFL fined Snyder $60 million stemming from Mary Jo White's investigation into the organization. And according to the report's findings from Mary Jo White, the investigators sustained both Tiffany Johnson's allegation of sexual harassment by Mr. Snyder and Jason Friedman's allegation of deliberate underreporting of NFL revenues by the club to avoid its VTS sharing obligations. So they were fined $60 million for that. That was after the sale was reported. And again, the Sean Taylor stuff, it was abysmal to watch on the field. Just made me want to throw up in my mouth because he has been just one of the worst owners in the history of the league and the history of professional sports. Just a slap in the face for a lot of the people that especially his family, Sean Taylor's family, just to be seen as something that's just thrown together. They were waiting. People were waiting years and years for a Sean Taylor retirement ceremony, with a jersey retirement ceremony. And it felt like they just used it as a stunt to try to correct their public relations course. And again, that's just a minuscule thing when it comes to a lot of the other stuff with the rampant, accusations of sexual abuse inside of that ownership group, and inside of that workplace, just in general, just a disgusting workplace. And Dan Snyder cannot get out soon enough. At this point, he is one of the worst owners, one of the worst people. I think I'm just going to say that, one of the worst people to ever own a professional football team. And he is really, and again, it's not over. I mean, a lot of this stuff is over. There's still a investigation that is ongoing, a federal investigation by the FBI that is still ongoing, regarding some of those sexual assault allegations, as well as some of their financial decisions that is still ongoing. And even after he leaves, put your hands together and pray that he does leave. I can't wait. When he eventually does leave, I pray that the NFL continues to do that operation, that investigation, find whatever they're going to find, and then continue to put out that investigation, because it is important to really show the world what was actually going on inside of that organization during the last, whatever, 23 years or whatever, however long it's been, 24 years as Daniel Snyder's been the owner of that football team. So he is gone. We can bid you adieu. Please never come back. And you know, I would be totally happy if he just was wiped off of the planet, the face of the earth, because of some of the stuff that is alleged against him and has been proven against him in NFL investigations. There's still the federal investigation going on, and that investigation, I really hope, continues to go on. It is ongoing, and we get a large report from that investigation, because he's a terrible human being. He was a terrible person, not just a bad owner. Like a bad owner, but a bad person, a really terrible person. He didn't care about the fans. That's why the dwindling experience at FedEx Field has continued to dwindle. He didn't want to change the name that has gone down as very, very racist. We look back on that name. We look back on the name that Washington had beforehand. You know what I'm talking about. And I'm like, how was that the name for so long? Like, how was that the name for so long? And he didn't want to change it. I mean, he cited other reasons, but I think we can make the obvious reason as to why. But, you know, he can. I hope they change the name again, to be honest with you, because I don't like the Commanders necessarily. I don't think that's a good name. But we'll see. I just think it can't end soon enough. Like, the quicker he is just out of the building, we don't see from him ever again. He goes and just disappears off of some island or something because he's, you know, going to be able to afford it. Because, again, I didn't mention this. He sold the team, Dan Snyder. He's walking away like a, you know, one of the thief with the bag over his hand. He's got like the striped suit on, or the stripe shirt on. And he's got the balaclava over his head. That's what Dan Snyder looks like right now, because he sold the team. Sold the team for $6.05 billion, with a B as in Barry, $1 billion. And that is now the most expensive team that has ever been sold. That way overshoots the Denver Broncos final price that they just sold for, like, last year, for $4.65 billion. So the Washington Commanders sell for $6.05 billion, and that is going to be the final price. I will say, before I conclude this topic, Bleach Report had a pretty good story on just the sale overall. What's going to kind of a breakdown, a pretty, you know, summarized version of what was going on with the sale. And then also, I implore you to read the Washington Post story on Daniel Snyder and what he was overseeing as the Washington football team's owner for the last 24 years. It deals with sexual assault, sexual harassment. So, you know, a trigger warning, if you will, for that sort of thing. It is important. It is a very good read. It is written by Will Hobson, Beth Reinhard, Liz Clark, and Dalton Bennett at the Washington Post. It is a very good read, and it really goes into depth of the stuff that he was overseeing. 17 women were accusing former Washington football team employees of sexual harassment, and verbal abuse. So just, I implore you to go read that story. It goes into detail about a lot of the stuff that he was overseeing and essentially approving of as the owner of that football team. Beautiful podcast listeners, James here. It is time to hear from another one of our sponsors, Alpine Climate Control. If you're a listener of mine, you know that Alpine Climate Control has been supporting the stuff that I do for a very long time, years now. And they are now officially sponsoring the Weekend Sports Wrap podcast as well. If you're looking for somebody to set up air conditioning systems, air conditioners, that sort of thing, Alpine Climate Control is the people to see. They also have air conditioning tune-ups. A good idea if your AC is not working properly, if it's not functioning properly, if you're standing in front of it, you're like, this should be a lot colder, and it's not, probably needs a tune-up. So check them out for all your air conditioning needs and AC tune-ups. They also have furnace systems and fireplace inserts. We are slowly approaching the fall months, and it is a good idea to get those things figured out and worked on now than as you enter the fall months. But they're creme de la creme, the cream of their crop, their specialty is their outdoor living spaces. They've got seating, fire pits, lighting, barbecue grills. If you're somebody that's like likes a little backyard barbecue, then they are the people to see to set you up. That's Alpine Climate Control. Stop by their showroom. They're on Coffeen Avenue just before Sheridan College and a little bit after Starbucks, or go online to alpineclimatecontrol.com and you can see all of their offerings there as well. That's alpineclimatecontrol.com. And again, big thank you to Alpine Climate Control for sponsoring the program. All right, we're going to move on once again. We're going to get out of football. Football is, we're done talking about football. We got, you know, training camp. I don't want to talk about training camp because, you know, at this point, we're just talking about nothing. If we're just talking about training camp, I do want to talk about one thing as we conclude here today. The Women's World Cup is going on. It is in the middle of going on. The U.S. just had their first game. What was it? Friday, I believe, against Vietnam. They won 3-0. They're in their group stages. Obviously, it just started. There's 32 teams in the Women's World Cup. It's going to be very good. The U.S. looks like they're primed to try to make a run at a three-peat. And if you were not aware, yeah, U.S. has won three in a row, 2015, 2019, or two in a row, I guess. They're looking for three in a row. They've won two in a row. So 2015, 2019 World Cup champions, and they're looking for their third in a row. And you look through the star list that the U.S. has on their Women's World Cup team. Alex Morgan, Megan Rapinoe, Rose Lavelle, Julie Ertz, you know, even going back a couple of years ago, Carly Lloyd, Abby Wambach, that was even before that. You could kind of, it's rare that you see a singular moment that inspired an entire generation to succeed at that, you know, national team level for any sort of sport, I think. And especially with something like soccer, where for the most part, especially on the men's side, there's never been anything like that for the men. There's not really been any singular moment that you can point to where you're like, okay, that inspired, you know, hundreds, thousands of kids to go out and play soccer, do the next one of those, you know. The men's side, and with soccer being not nearly as popular over here as it is, you know, in Europe or in Asia, not in Asia, in Europe, South America, that part of the world, then you look at the women's side of things, and the U.S. has dominated, obviously, over the last 2015, so 8 years, essentially. And heading into this year, they're still one of the favorites to go on and win three-peat, possibly. But there's one singular point that you could point to as women's U.S. soccer was coming up, and everybody that is familiar with U.S. women's soccer probably knows what I'm talking about, but that 1999 team, the 99ers, as they call them, and the Brandi Chastain penalty kick in 1999 to win the World Cup for the first time for the women's team. And I'm sure you can actually point to that as a point for some of the men that are playing today. Christian Pulisic, Timothy Weah, Wes McKenzie, Tyler Adams, they probably saw that moment as another point. I want to be able to do that for my men's team, because the men's team, you know, up until this point, essentially, even in 2023, have never really had that moment. I guess you can kind of argue the Landon Donovan goal against, is that against Belgium? No, Ghana? I think it was against Ghana. Anyways, that was in the World Cup 10 years ago, probably, maybe even further than that, 2012, 2011, something like that. But the women, you can pinpoint that moment, the Brandi Chastain penalty kick that won the World Cup for the 99ers in 1999 over China, that you can see now has really paid dividends into inspiring an entire new generation of soccer players for the U.S. women's team. And they have gone on to dominate as well. And that is just going to be a wheel that is going to continue on into the future, where the women's team dominated in 2015, won the World Cup there, and then into 2019 as well, two-time World Cup champions. They're four-time World Cup champions, not just two-time, four-time World Cup champions. I'm just talking about 1999. They also won in 1991, 99. 1999 is the most famous team, obviously. And then 2015, 2019, four-time World Cup champions. They're the most successful World Cup team in all of soccer for the women's side of things. So how about that? And the 2015 and the 2019 team is going to do the same exact thing that the 99ers did, where they're going to inspire an entire generation. And even this upcoming team, if they're able to pull off the three-peat, obviously, they're going to be able to inspire an entire generation of new players. And that's just going to become a rotating wheel of talent that is going to come through the U.S. women's national team's system and go on to play for the U.S. women's national team and continue to play at a high level that they have. It is something that is very interesting in that sense, because you can, like I said, you can pinpoint the exact moment where an entire generation of people were inspired to go on and play a game that was not necessarily as popular as a lot of the other sports in the world that we were watching in terms of sports. You know, basketball, football, baseball, all that other stuff was a lot more popular. Women's side is a little bit different. You know, soccer has just been always very popular in the women's side of things. Women's World Cup and women's soccer in general has always been very popular. But you can see that it became a time has gone on, obviously, you can tell that has really paid dividends for them. And, you know, branding that team as the 99ers with Mia Hamm, Brandon Chastain, obviously, as being the 99ers and having that branding move forward in life. Somebody for girls to look up to as something that they could actually become, World Cup champions of a game that everybody was watching. They sold out the Rose Bowl for that final game because it was hosted in the United States. And that's also, that helped a lot as well, a big part of it, because he had a lot of those games going on in the United States. Again, the Rose Bowl, they sold out for the final. And you saw, you know, you could see little girls looking up to people like Brandi Chastain, like Mia Hamm, and say, I could be like that person and go on and play for a national team like the women's national team that is going to play in the World Cup right now. And it'll be very interesting to see. I mean, look, here's the thing though, women's national, the U.S., they got target painted on their backs. It's a very different team compared to the U.S. team. The men's team is very much, when it comes to a lot of the top teams, they will be the underdogs in a lot of their competitions. The men's team will be, because of how much further it feels like a lot of those other teams are down the line compared to the men's team. They're very young. They're still up and coming. So they will be the underdogs in a lot of those competitions. Whereas the women's team, granted, they've changed a little bit up. They're getting into the younger side, but they're still pretty, their average age is still a little bit older than some of the others. I think they have the oldest average age on their World Cup squad than any other team in the World Cup. And they will more than likely, no matter what, who they play against, more than likely be the favorites in every one of their games. So it's just a total tone shift, depending on who you're watching. If you're watching the men's national team, you're watching young guys, up and coming, hopefully a team that can capture a World Cup victory or something like that in the future. Whereas the women, older squad, veteran squad for the most part, and they are expected to win win a World Cup for the U.S. So it's two completely ends of the seesaw, if you will, for both of these teams. And I'm excited to see the women's team do good. They just, like I said, won 3-0 against Vietnam. They're going to be playing again, I believe it's on Wednesday, against the Netherlands, the Dutch. It is a rematch, actually, of the 2019 World Cup final. So we'll see. We'll see who's changed for the better or for the worse. So we'll see. Women's World Cup, please watch it. It's always fun. They're playing in the in New Zealand / Australia. That's where the host country is, Australia / New Zealand. So it's a little, I mean, this upcoming game, 26 Wednesday, is at 7 p.m. our time. So we're good there. But as they get a little bit further into the group chase, it's going to be a little bit challenging to try to get people up to watch this. August 1st game is at 1 a.m. That's their next game against after the Netherlands game. It's Portugal, August 1st. That's at 1 a.m. That's a Tuesday. So, you know, not expecting a whole lot of people to tune into that game, but that's their last group stage game. I'm assuming they'll do some scheduling stuff when it comes to the semifinal, the quarterfinal, and the semifinal, and so on and so forth. If the U.S. gets out of their group, which obviously against Vietnam, 3-0 victory, that's a very good start. They win against the Netherlands, they'll be in fantastic position to move on. But we'll see. Again, rematch of the World Cup final in 2019 for this U.S. women's national team. I'm very excited to see how it pans out. And go USA. Let's make it a three-peat. Let's make it a three-peat. They're going for a bowl-style three-peat at this point. Three in a row. And we'll see what happens. That, though, ladies and gentlemen, please tune in to that game. And that, for us, is going to wrap up the show. I want to thank you very much for tuning in. We're back. This is the Weekend Sports Rep Podcast. I want to thank you very much for tuning in. Again, remember, if you're listening to this on SheridanMedia.com, I appreciate it. But it's not the only place you can listen to it. You can listen to it wherever you want to listen to it on podcasts. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, wherever you want to listen to it, you can listen to it on any of those podcasting platforms. We are sponsored by Jack and Kathleen Wood at 307 Real Estate. Big thank you to them, of course. First sponsors, they'll always have a spot in my heart, obviously, being the first sponsor. So big thank you to them. And of course, now, you heard their ad already, Alpine Climate Control. Big shout out to them. Thank you so much to Alpine Climate Control for the sponsorship as well. And if you need any of your air conditioning needs, furnace needs, outdoor living spaces, that sort of thing, please check out Alpine Climate Control. Please support the people that support us. That is all I ask of you. So big thank you to the sponsors. And remember to leave a rating on all of those, on the episodes that you're listening to. I'd greatly appreciate that as well on those podcasting platforms. Help us getting to the trending section, if you will, for a lot of those platforms. So big thank you to the sponsors. Big thank you to the fans that are listening. Wouldn't be able to do it without you guys either. Big thank you very much. But that's going to wrap up the show this week. I'm James Timberlake, and this has been the Weekend Sports Wrap Podcast.